And we're back. Hey, thanks for taking the time to listen to our podcast.
Yeah, you know, you make decisions every day on how to spend your time, and we appreciate that you spend a little time with us.
Right, but we're also going to focus a little bit more today on how we actually consume our time, because while we think it's spending, we're not guaranteed of having that time.
True. So we're going to kind of talk about time today as consuming it. And speaking of which, I have a story.
Woop woop.
Anyway, I have this lovely daily routine of walking 20 minutes up the hill to drop off my 3-year-old for preschool and then walking 20 minutes down the hill and then 20 minutes up and down to pick him up later in the afternoon. But one of these days I had dropped him off. I'm walking down and I hear a car approaching me from behind, slowing down a little bit. A head pops out the window and says hi to me. And I'm like, oh, what? And yes, it's my friends. I do know them. It's not awkward. And they continue to drive past me. So I'm, you know, walking down, enjoying my morning. It's beautiful, as keto mornings normally are. And I catch up to my friends in their vehicle. And they're
on the same street.
Yes. They are stopped waiting to turn right. And I catch up to them. And then I pass them. And then I continue on my walk. And I kind of keep looking back because now it's like, it's a competition, right?
Life is a competition. Yes.
Yeah. Always. Always. It's all competition, keeping track of all the points at all times. And so I keep kind of looking back and they're not even moving. I think maybe finally I saw them turning right, but there was just tons of traffic. And I was thinking in my little feeble brain, man, if they were driving to my apartment, I would beat them there on foot.
Easily.
Yeah, easily. There was that much traffic. All that to say, I spent my time walking. They spent their time sitting in their vehicle, in traffic. And we all get the same amount of time in a day.
Right. And how do we consume our days?
All I want to say is I definitely was the winner.
All right. We are Red Weather Christians.
I'm Jen.
I'm Steve. We're here working through what drives, motivates, and inspires us to act.
Whether it's a career, a religion, a family, how we spend our time, does it even make us happy?
And today, the focus is consumerism.
Yes. And when we think of consumerism, you listeners out there, you tell me if I'm wrong. Don't you normally think of just how you spend your money? And that's kind of it. Like, oh, this consumerist culture that we're in, like buying, 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 getting it on Amazon, blah, blah, blah. I hate that I even name dropped Amazon. I'm sorry. Then I just did it again.
This is ridiculous. And so we're looking at different ways that we consume in our lives. Some basic things, survival things, that we consume food.
Yes, yes. I read this book, surprise, many, many years ago called Mindless Eating. I'm sorry, I didn't think about talking about this on the episode, so I didn't look up the author. I'll try to put it in the show notes. But it was really good, and it's all about how we eat this food without really thinking about it. We're not eating mindfully. So it's that idea. You've probably grown up with parents telling you, like, don't just eat chips out of the bag. Put a few in a bowl so that it's kind of like a portion control thing. And you're not just like mindlessly eating them out of the bag. And then before you know it, oh my gosh, I ate the whole bag of chips.
I did not have anyone tell me that. There was never that much to go around when there were 4 of us kids eating 1 bag of chips.
Monsters.
Just gone. We think of that with consuming beverages. We mindlessly consume calories with any sort of sugary drink.
Oh gosh, don't even get me started.
Right. So we're not focusing necessarily on that basic human survival aspect of consuming to survive or for energy.
Right. Because if you remember, I mean, the whole point of calories, people, is to give us energy. They're not like the devil or evil or something. It's just that when we are mindlessly eating, we eat way, way, way more than we need.
So the other way that Jen has already name dropped twice is consuming items or using our money to consume goods, consumer goods.
Yes. Ordering all that stuff online.
And what do we do with it? What do we have to show for it? Sometimes it breaks quickly. Sometimes the kids don't even like it. They toss it to the side. We have used our money, which we had to trade our life for, to then have something that doesn't have value to us. But we would have already valued our time.
No, wait, 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 wait. I just bought a candle at an arts market last weekend, and I have been very much enjoying it. I don't even have to light this candle, and I smell it as I walk by. And it is the same scent as the Anthropology candle, and it makes me very happy, Stephen.
That's fine. And that's wonderful that you can appreciate something that you spent time in your life earning money to get.
I do think, though, that you bring up a good point. I'm sure we've talked about it before, but the idea of, like, it's not just that, oh, I have this money to spend. Like, you got the money somehow, and probably you got it by working for it, putting in time, doing something to then be able to receive money. So the next time you're at that arts market and you're like, ooh, this candle is $32. Should I get
it? Is that how much it was?
Ooh, maybe.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, many, many hours of burn time. Anyway, we'll have to chat about that after the episode.
Well, this brings me to a book that I like. It has been updated for more contemporary topics. It's called Your Money or Your Life. Speaking specifically about you trade one for the other. You either can have more money or you can have more life.
Right. So if you're in a job where you know what you make an hour, think of it that way. For a $32 candle, is that an hour of your life? Is it 2 hours of your life?
But the burn time.
I know. And it smells so good. Listen, I recognize that that was a kind of ridiculous purchase, but every now and then, I think it's okay to have a ridiculous purchase every now and then if you can afford it.
We could debate that at a different time with a different financial episode. They would say don't do that in that particular book, even if you can't afford it, because your life is more valuable, you might as well retire instead. However, the point would be to get out of that. We often hear time is money.
Yeah, and we always want to remind you on this podcast that time is money.
And if you think of that as a currency, we're going to talk about some other things that you might not otherwise consider consuming.
So think about this. The fact that we consume information, we consume it via the news, via social media, all kinds of places, online, on TV. Does anyone watch TV anymore? I think some people do. YouTube, for sure. But we're consuming information, and it's getting to the point, it's gotten to the point where a lot of times we are mindlessly consuming information.
And it can be good or bad information, but ultimately we think of it now more as entertainment. It's not even necessarily valuable information. You're like, oh, but I watched that docuseries on Netflix. I'm sorry, that was your life you just consumed.
Yeah, Steve and I used to watch Criminal Minds, if anybody remembers that show. We used to watch that, and then we kind of got to this turning point in life. We kind of looked at each other. We're like, why are we watching this? Why are we spending our lives, like, why are we spending time viewing sometimes kind of gruesome scenes?
Disturbing.
Why are we doing this with our time? And so we stopped watching it.
We do still watch some other maybe disturbing, maybe totally fictional entertainment things. Yeah. We're not monsters.
We're not monsters. Well, maybe we are a little bit is what you're saying.
That's how we are monsters.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so imagine consuming information, news, and such as taking up your time. And it costs you money because time is money. But also consider what you're getting from that. So there's this wonderful book from 1985 that warned the general public, whoever would read it, how we are amusing ourselves to death by Neil Postman, and how TV had become the source of information as opposed to the written word or radio, and it diluted our language.
Video killed the radio star.
Sure, yeah. But the idea is that we're just mindlessly consuming information, and for what purpose? The information we get in the news is often not even useful to our lives. I mean, Jen, you showed me some really funny Star Wars memes mashed up with worship songs the other day.
Yeah, thanks, Gail, for showing me those.
And I just want to, you know, you have used them in your life now to show me and to show our boys.
Yeah.
But overall.
And also I watched them originally with my friend. Yeah.
What has that gained you in life points?
Oh, definitely it gained me in life points. Definitely. I was very mindfully watching a mashup between Christian worship music and Star Wars sounds and clips and music.
And beeps and boops.
And it brought me much joy.
But it was entertainment.
And I recognized it as entertainment. And I think we need entertainment in our lives. But I think the point the book is making is that it's so much, and we feel like we have to fill our day with it. I don't even think we have the thought process. I'm backing up on that statement. I think that's the problem that the book is talking about. All the way back from 1985. This was way before any kind of...
Before the internet.
Yes!
Folks. So another thing that he highlights in the book is how the term news came about in general. You ask, what's new? What did you hear that's new? And it's totally irrelevant to your life. We're talking about Texas cattle ranchers hearing about the news of Maine bean farmers. Neither one can use information about the other. It's totally relevant, but it's news. It's news to them.
I think also with news, it got to a point where you want to have this feeling of staying informed, to know what's going on in the world, even when those things are totally out of your control and don't relate to you at all, but you still feel like it is necessary. I do actually agree with this to an extent. I do think it's good to know the general things that are happening in the world. Local news, maybe I try to avoid, but...
Yet that's the most in your control.
Oh, yeah. But it's awful. Oh. But I think it's important to know kind of the big things going on in the world.
Well, what, for a trivia show? Or for the news quiz at the end of the week from the New York Times?
Maybe just so I seem smart to my friends.
And this is what perpetuates our consumption of information. To seem smart? Maybe the smart choice is to avoid it altogether.
We do pay a subscription to the New York Times.
And we pay the foreign subscription, which is $1 a month.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
But the idea of your circle of control. Imagine recent events in Florida concerning Hurricane Ian. Now, we still have friends and properties there, so we kind of had a reason to stay informed about it. And Jen was even there right before it hit. But I got some info from the New York Times about Hurricane Ian and hurricanes in general in Florida and how it's so terrible in the last 20 years, it's worse than the last 40 years of the 20th century. And I had to call BS on that. I didn't even know the numbers yet, but I'm like, why are you giving me only 60 years of data? There's so much more data out there than this.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because, I mean, there definitely is an objective there a little bit to convince people that climate change is a real thing. And, you know, in their defense, they are trying to show people like, hey, things are, they are a changing, the temperatures are increasing, and storms are getting worse. But the way that they displayed the data was what was off-putting for us.
And terribly misleading. If they went back to the first 60 years of the 20th century, actually just from 1919 to 1949, which I did, I looked up, Wikipedia has these answers, there were more Category 3, 4, and 5, which are considered the catastrophic hurricane levels in that 30-year period than there have been in the last 30-year period, which includes Hurricane Andrew, which devastated Miami. Where was that information? What kind of news am I consuming?
Yeah, you just have to be careful, because we think New York Times is pretty decent. Definitely decent, as we say. But even they have an objective.
Sensationalism, if you will.
Maybe like a little bit of an agenda. I think they do try to be balanced, but they also need to stay in business. And the art of staying business as a newspaper, I don't know if it's changed that much actually through the years, because it has always been the sensational, the extreme, and the bad, unfortunately, as far as what they choose to print.
And so when we're looking at consuming information, we don't want to be just consumers. Just like you should be more mindful about consuming food, more mindful about consuming items and spending your money, we want to talk about consuming information in a better, healthier way. We need to always question these things. We talk about opening up the conversation. The conversation is, wow, there are a lot of bad hurricanes recently. Has that ever happened before?
Yeah, or taking the next step of looking some stuff up on your own too, because there is a lot of information that is available to us, and then talking about it.
Right, you don't just consume it. That means you're like a one-sided entity in this. And humans have the capabilities of being better than that, because they don't look at just the consumption. They look at, how can I use this in my life? If it's to answer trivia about most recent devastating hurricanes in Florida, you can start naming them on your hand, Ian and Irma and Matthew and whatever else. But how does that affect my life?
I think a point that we're trying to make, if you haven't caught on yet, is that Steve and I want to be the best humans we can be, and we want you guys as listeners to be as well. And just mindlessly consuming food, items, information is not going to do it for you. You need to question. You need to stop and have a conversation about things.
Sometimes, though, we do consume some information on the way to get to something we actually like. For instance, I read the New York Times email, scroll all the way to the bottom, get to the crossword. That's pretty much it.
Because the crossword's fun. It's just a mini crossword, so you can do it like under a minute.
Should be able to do it under a minute. That's the goal. In other things, I consume plenty of unnecessary sporting news.
Definitely.
I use that only in trivia and to try to win fantasy football leagues.
Yeah. I definitely consume too much, can I just say the general term, social media?
Of course you can. I think we've already referenced that in other episodes.
Yeah, well, working on it.
But our whole idea about consumerist culture is that we consume a lot of things, a lot of different things. We're told to keep doing that. We're told that everybody else is doing that.
And we're all getting fat, metaphorically. And maybe literally.
Or figuratively. Let's see if this sounds familiar to what's considered a default lifestyle. You wake up with an alarm clock, you roll over and you immediately check your phone. Maybe you scroll Facebook, Twitter, or TikTok, or the news to stay informed. You get in your car, you drive to work. Maybe you had breakfast, maybe it was a terrible breakfast, maybe it was just to get some calories. And then you do your job, whatever that means. Coming home from your job, you're back in traffic. You then maybe order something for dinner because you're tired and you don't want to cook. You turn on the television. Maybe you get a tasty drink, beer, wine, whatever it might be for you, and you sit down, and that's it.
Yeah, and you sit down because you're tired. You're tired and you've put in a day's work and you feel like this is what I get to do. I get to relax now because I've had a day of work. And then you're also telling yourself things like, well, I want to have a little treat. I want some snacks on the couch while I watch a show because I deserve this.
Because when you work, you need to unwind from all that work, and relaxing is the only way to do it, and eating mindlessly might be doing it, or drinking mindlessly might be doing that, but that's your time in a day.
Yeah, and so we're getting all of this from an article that was just written on one of Steve's favorite blogs, Mr. Money Mustache. It's his latest article, And he's talking about this scientist that he loves and has podcasts and everything, named Dr. Andrew Huberman. He's a Stanford professor of neurobiology and ophthalmology. So he wrote out this, it was kind of like side-by-side bullet points of a default lifestyle and then what he calls a science lifestyle. And through all of his research and his studies, he's put together this science lifestyle of daily activities that is going to optimize your life. So going through a few of these, not all of them, we will link the article to our show notes. But the first thing is to wake up naturally as your sleep cycle ends. I mean, we can stop right there because that, like, who does that if you have a job? Actually, Steve, you do.
It's also easier when you're in a city that the sun rises at
6 a.m.
and you don't have curtains that work that well.
Yeah. Oh, man. And I mean, we get to bed at a reasonable time for sure. Okay, so wake up naturally and then proceed directly outside into the natural light.
That may be difficult for some of you who sleep in the nude.
Oh, hey, put on some clothes first. Yeah, that's true. Okay, and then direct your vision upwards and also try to get sunlight on your skin if possible. Well, that's definitely easy living here in Ecuador on the equator. That sunlight is there and it is strong. Then it says go for a short walk or even a run. Then return and have a light breakfast, coffee or tea, omelet if you're hungry. I like how he adds these little details. Then grab your pen and paper journal, write out your thoughts for the day. Then walk or bike to the office.
Do that.
Yeah, that's huge. That is just not something that I'd say a typical human probably does unless you live in a big city. Then turn off your phone and disable email for 1 to 3 hours. And that's to give you time to be creative and produce. Then come out of that, do some email responses, go to your meetings, whatever. Go for a walk at lunch, finish work, walk home, do some weight training. Avoid casual alcohol consumption.
Turn devices off at around 7:30 or whenever you have about 2 hours, 3 hours before you go to bed.
Yeah. And then he says, by optimizing your day in this way, you'll get tired and fall asleep easier. And then you'll be able to allow yourself to begin your sleep cycle in a good and healthy way.
And look, some counter arguments here that are pretty obvious. If you have kids, especially little ones, good luck trying to organize your day in a rational manner.
And good luck trying to get all the stages of sleep in one night uninterrupted.
But if you are just an adult, my goodness, these are the least things that you can do to optimize your life.
And yet, I think people would hear that list and be like, there's just no way. There's no way I could do it. And almost shut down. Like the idea of biking or walking to work, I think immediately people are like, oh, that's impossible because I don't live close enough to do that.
So looking at daily activities of your life or our lives, if we were to just be transparent about that, where are you consuming your time? How are you consuming your time? For instance, as Jen is walking down the hill, which is exercise, outside, in the sunlight, three things that they say to do right away, our friends are sitting in traffic.
And they're the first to admit that it was like, yeah, the traffic at that time of day going down the hill right there is horrible. So I guess what we need to do is probably have a follow-up conversation with them. Just be like, well, why are you in the car then?
Right. Why are you?
Maybe they were going somewhere farther away. I actually don't know. But have conversations with your friends about this. Because there are certainly lifestyle changes that we can make where we are outside more, we're walking more.
And why do we get complacent with, well, that's just my daily routine. That's just how it has to be. That's just,
I think a lot of it is where you choose to live. Do you live in a suburb where you have to drive 40 minutes to work? Because biking that distance, yeah, that does seem unreasonable. It really does. And so many people are like, well, this is just what it is for me.
Question that. Where and who is telling you that that's how it has to be?
Yeah. And we lived in suburbia for a good chunk of our lives. And we made do. We tried to do our best. We actually lived in a house that was close enough to bike to school where we worked and to church and everything like that. But the common narrative is that you do need to live in the suburbs and commute to work.
And sometimes we make excuses because of our kids. We conveniently let their lives dictate our need for a car or to commute or something else when we can do better at modeling for them how life can be.
Yeah, and this is really difficult. We understand that. And we also understand that there definitely is a balance. There are things that we do in our lives where we get into a car. For example, tomorrow, Asher has two soccer games. Steve has a soccer game. And we are walking to none of them. We are biking to none of them. We're going to take an Uber to all of them. So absolutely, there are probably going to be times where you're getting into a car and you're living your life like that. What we're saying is if you can control as much as you can to live a wonderful and beautiful life, giving your kids some great things, but not all the things, and modeling, practicing what you preach, and traveling mostly by foot or bicycle, that would be what we would try to do.
So if we go back to consumer culture that we live in, let's ask ourselves, what does overconsumption look like? If you consume too much food, what does that look like?
Well, you're probably going to get fat.
If you consume too many products, you buy too much stuff.
Yeah, sometimes you can tell by entering a person's home. You can tell pretty quickly.
Or their finances are all messed up.
Or debt.
Those are pretty obvious. If you're actually going to be introspective about it. The overconsumption of information, however, is hard to tell.
Yeah, and it might be hard to tell even when you're introspecting, when you're just simply asking yourself, like, do I do this?
Jen, do you read too many books?
Never.
And there's some information in there that I would agree is probably not totally useful. It's works of fiction.
Taylor Jenkins Reid? Come on now.
It's information. It is, but it's, you know, what do? I don't think of them as a bad use of your time, per se. But we still want to be critical of our own selves. And, okay, what are we consuming too much of?
Listen, and we've said this before so many times, but have some time in your day where you don't have anything to do. Because that's when we're going to be creative, and that's really, really important. Or that's when we're going to reflect on our own lives. Also very important.
A quick aside, my philosophy students asked me, why isn't there ever any homework for this class? Or is there ever going to be any homework for this class? And I kind of gave them a puzzled look as if they really wanted more to read, because I can always offer them something more to read. But then I thought, no, your homework is to think. For 15 minutes every night. Just think. No screens, no books, no phones, definitely.
No podcasts.
Just think.
So we want to go ahead and tell you guys that that is your homework assignment as well. Every night, or it doesn't have to be night. Every day, you carve out 15 minutes at least to just think.
And remember that this thinking should not involve you with pencil and paper to write down your thoughts. It actually will help you. There is science to back this up. If you think and try to remember your thoughts separately, that you just keep it in your head.
Crazy. This is not to say to not journal, because that's important, people.
It's that use that time exclusively on your own mind.
Yeah, take it as a time that you're not consuming anything at all. You're just allowing yourself the freedom to think.
And remember that every day you will be consuming your time until the day you die. And what are you consuming it on?
We are Red Leather Christians.
I'm Steve.
I'm Jen.
We hope you'll feel empowered to question the rules you follow,
fear mediocrity,
and keep the conversation going.